Hello, and welcome to the Maverick Radio Hour. I am your host, G.T. Maverick, and we have another extemporaneous verbal essay ready for you here. This is September 29th, 2021, and this is the third, I believe, official episode that we're putting together. And we've got some interesting topics for you today, and we're going to keep going on with a mix of sociology, psychology, science, a little bit of logic, economics, that sort of thing, and seeing how all that ties into the economic propositions that I've brought forth, and also the constitutional principles that they were set down and laid down many, many ages ago by our founding fathers and the good people who believe still in the freedom of man and the power of individuality and how important that really is in our lives. So there's a topic that I'd like to continue on a little bit with that is from last week to finish some thoughts on I believe there was a story that I started off with about the fact that I can admit many times that I've been conned, and ultimately the final thought on that bit of a story there, as it pertains to our benefit, is that there is great wisdom in admitting that one has been conned or taken for a ride, and admitting so is vital for a progression of character and to move on into a better understanding of reality. Because if you just allow that to be, now the thing that holds us back is that sense of group psychological bit of shame, bit of guilt, that sort of thing. You don't want to admit to that sort. And you can see that psychology has been present and put upon us through the media, through movies, music, all that sort of thing, where rather than admit that, say, that one has been wrong or that someone made a mistake or that sort of thing, there's been a weird type of tendency for folks to double down when they're clearly been misled. And I don't see the benefit in that really at all in just about any sort of manner. I find it kind of reprehensible in some ways too, that when folks are clearly incorrect about something and that they get perpetuated, you can see that sort of thing with on the top political level with folks like George W. Bush not admitting that the invasion of Afghanistan or Iraq was based on lies, mostly WMDs that never really existed, that sort of thing. Now, some of that might be the noble lie as well, and we've seen that mentioned as well. This is something that Rand Paul brought up concerning Fauci, that when it came to his prescriptions for what the country ought to do, he would give the noble lie. He would basically pull what a pair of parents would do for a kid and kind of tell a white lie in order to encourage them to do something beneficial for themselves. Now, what's different is that the population here in America, we are not children. I'm not a child anymore, neither are you, if you're listening to this. Now, at the same time, there might be some kids out there listening. Hey, how's it going? really, what I'm trying to do here, and what I think a lot of folks are trying to do, is to encourage all of us to have a better be more assured in our own thoughts and our own thinkings, and to be less swayed by the demagogues and authoritarians who clearly don't have our best interests in mind. And toward that end, when I hear those noble lies, it's really insulting. It really is. Like, as I was talking in the first episode, especially about the methodology versus subject matter debate, and part of the reason I bring this up early is because I'm setting a base for determining reality as we see it, and coming together on things that we can agree on, commonalities. You might say finding the common truths that augment the subjective, personal truths that we know as well, that are all different and unique. And it's wonderful. And by the way, it really is something else to see people be their unique selves. This is something that I've tried to encourage as well in the poetry open mics that I've been party to and often hosted over the last decade or so. And that's something that would really... I was talking with a friend of mine, an artist out of Topeka recently, and we were both talking about this. And he's got a show going on here soon enough. I'll get to you all about that here shortly, depending on how things might work around here, because. In some ways, I'm not exactly sure who's listening, or where is this going out to, what sort of topics should I stick to, and also I haven't been there yet for this particular stretch of it. So as things are kind of still in a local and national level, kind of in flux, and I think anyone can, with their eyes open, can see that that's still the case. Anyway, concerning those open mics, one of the things that I really liked about that is when someone would get up there and speak their truth for the first time, it's like that uniqueness, that brilliance that each and every one of us has. Say, the old song that we hear in church, "This little light of mine, I'm going to let it shine," right? Now, we all got these little lights. We got this spark of the divine in us. And you can describe that in any sort of manner that you want, whether it's in a religious sense, a spiritual, or in a scientific actuality, based on our objective science that we can see that we all indeed do have a very unique DNA. And that doesn't go away. We can't be turned into a hegemonic mass. If we do, it's pretty ugly when it happens. There is an aspect to the human experience that really requires and is so unique and individual that when we get turned into robots or forced into robots, it's like forcing a square peg into a round hole, and it doesn't really work. There's all sorts of efforts that authoritarian power structures and people will make in order to attempt to force that square peg into that round hole, but it really doesn't. It doesn't happen in the end. Humanity always breaks through. Life finds a way, as they say. But I think it's a beautiful thing when you see people who've been hesitant about going up there and speaking their truth and saying what it is on their mind, and they finally do. It's like when folks do that, it's really like a new gem or jewel that unearthed itself from the soil, from this wherever it came from, deep mine of sorts. And then there's a miraculous, brilliant jewel that steps forth into the light and then shines. it's a beautiful thing to see that happen, and that's one of the things I really love about having open mic poetry shows, because anyone can hop up there and do what they speak their mind and say what they wish. And that's when you have a circumstance, situation, when you put on that sort of thing and you show that you're willing to speak your mind, regardless of what it is, and let the judging wait. Let the judging be on the side. We advance as a society and as people through communication. And without that communication, we don't advance. We stagnate. And eventually that advancement comes out in ways that that are not necessarily the prettiest. In a similar manner, you might find that those who have, let's say, some deep anger issues for whatever reason might, if they don't find an outlet for that, it will come out in a explosive sort of manner. It's all pressure. This is like the pressure of a boiling kettle. If you keep the top on and you hold that top on, it doesn't matter. It keeps boiling, it keeps boiling, it keeps boiling. You're just going to have to apply more and more pressure and more and more pressure and more and more pressure, and then it's going to burst out in a way that you don't really want. You're going to get sprayed with steam, and it's not going to feel good. In such a manner, you can look at what's happening with the virus panic and the authoritarian impositions put upon the population, both here in the States and across the free world, and see that as the iron hand pushing down on the top of that lid, holding the boiling water inside. And add another analogy to it, and there's a frog in there too that that needs to hop out of that water. But eventually that boiling water is going to push off that hand, and all the pressure that even an international group of a syndicate of globalists who are attempting to enslave all of us, they can't do that forever. And we're seeing that still every day. And there is so many ways in which this is getting better for all of us, and people really are stepping it up, because it's a one-way street for the awakening, really. Once you wake up, you don't really go back to sleep, ultimately. And that's what we're seeing. And the more and more that people get pushed is the more and more that they end up pushing back. And it goes back to Newton's second law. Every action has an equal and opposite reaction. And there are fundamental aspects to the human experience and the human spirit that will not go away. Certainly for me, I'm not going to let this stand and go quiet into that dark night. So not only is it wonderful when people step up and show their uniqueness and their beauty to the world, it's also going back to that wisdom of admitting that you've been wrong, or not that you've been wrong necessarily, or that you've been misled, so to speak. Because you can look at the fact that, I mean, when you were a kid, how long did you hang on to the fairy tale of Santa Claus? That there really was a bearded man on the North Pole who flew around and then dropped presents through the chimney and gave them to all the good kids and gave coal to the bad kids. How long did you hold on to that? Personally, let's see, I was maybe, I don't know, 7 or 8 years old, something like that, when I thought, okay, that's enough. This is ridiculous. Clearly it's not some jolly old Saint Nick rolling around through the sky passing along these presents. They're clearly coming from somewhere else. And you could look at that in a way that there's also some benefit to this, certainly growing up, that there's a beauty to the innocence that comes with kids that we have in our society in some ways made a point to extend and make a little bit longer in order that the kids can be kids and not really see the ugly truth of the world. But that only lasts so long. Eventually you have to put away childish things and grow up, be an adult, and look on the world with clear eyes and see what's really happening. When you tell yourself these fairy tales, ultimately it has to end at some point. It's a means to an end. And if you don't let that end, then you're going to be in a miasma and have that sort of the Peter Pan syndrome, and who knows what's going to happen. It's not going to be good in any case, and you won't be stepping up and taking responsibility for your life and your community and what you can really do to benefit those around you, taking care of yourself as well as others. Because that only, it starts there first. You got to be able to take care of yourself, then you can help out others. And this isn't new information exactly, but it's important to reiterate this in the world that we are at present. So, considering also the mask and vaccine logic when it comes to mandates. So, not only are mandates illegal, they go outside. They're created outside the frame of the law of the land, which is the Constitution and the Bill of Rights. Like I said last week, if you take away all the rationale behind this whole thing, oh, it's a virus, and it does this, and comes from, passes through air, and people get sick, and regardless of what the explanation for it is, whatever the rationale for it is, because the people in power will lie about anything and everything in order to control you. So that is the facts. They will do that. And so whether or not they're being truthful about something or not is dependent upon you opening your eyes and seeing what's actually happening in the world around you and using your own senses and trusting people who can be trusted as well. So when I opened my eyes about this sometime back, when the rationale itself didn't make any sense anymore. Namely, I was in Washington, D.C. in March and April and May of 2020. And what I noticed was that people weren't falling over sick and dying. They also weren't coughing or having excessive symptoms. And so this was as well in tandem with the fact that there was an immediate imposition of mask mandates and immediate closing of all public bathrooms. Now, when you close all the public bathrooms, what do the homeless people, what do the street people do? Well, they're going to have to find them somewhere, but they're certainly going to be in even worse health than they were before, because sanitation is absolutely vital. This is something that gets left out of the conversation when people talk about the benefits of 20th century medication as well. Why it is we have a longer lifespan than what we did 400 years ago. Often enough, I would like to argue, and I think this is the case if you look deeper into the information behind it, is that it's less about the amazing medications that we have, besides perhaps penicillin and things like morphine and the ability to do surgeries by putting people under, but it's about sanitation. It's about keeping oneself clean, hygiene, getting rid of, not having excrement and waste all over the place, and having toiletries and sending that off to somewhere where it can be disposed of, where people aren't congregating. That's pretty vital. And you can see from the data brought out way back when, in the early 1900s, there was big time governmental programs that encourage sanitation amongst rural communities and around in cities as well, that had a huge, huge impact upon the prevalence of diseases like typhoid fever and dysentery and cholera and all of that, that had a much greater impact than any sort of pharmaceutical drugs that were brought on the allopathic Rockefeller medicine era in the early 20th century when they started taking over the American Medical Association. So I noticed that in 2020 there in the spring that not only were the street folks doing just fine compared to how they were before, but they had their own public bathrooms removed from access. They'd have to get on a bus for 20 minutes and go to Walmart outside the city in order to use the bathroom there and wash their hands, clean themselves up, all that sort of thing. And so it would appear to me that if anyone, these are the facts here. If you're trying to, if you're trying to keep people healthy as a government, you don't close public bathrooms. You just don't. What the, like, it's the most ridiculous and absurd nonsense that can be possibly intended or given as some sort of rationale for public health. It's bullshit. Bullshit. Completely. That they would do that and expect that, oh yeah, well, people are going to be healthier now. No, not at all. Sanitation is vital for the health of a population. And when you pull that away, what you're doing is causing disease. They're trying to cause disease. And that's why this is adds right in there with the fact that this was a scam. This whole thing has been a scam, and it's been planned for ages back. For decades, it's been in the making. That was something that I saw with my own eyes. It is clear that that is the case. Being in D.C. In the spring of 2020, and thereabouts in Maryland as well. So considering that, you also look at some of the logic that gets put upon us when it comes to the masks and vaccines. One of the things about them that is, again, this is an attempt to break our logic, similar to and break the method for which we actually utilize to make practical improvements upon our world, similar to when I brought up the 9/11 and how the destruction of the buildings are inconsistent with Newtonian physics. What it does is causes a cognitive dissonance, and that's part of what's happening here. The cognitive dissonance that gets created when it comes to the mask and the vaccine logic is this, is that if the mask works and you're wearing one, then you're protected. If the vaccine works and you take one, then you're protected. Full stop. That's it. Now, if it doesn't work, then what are you wearing one for? You know, you don't need to force a mask on someone else in order to protect yourself. You don't need to force a vaccine on someone else in order to protect yourself. That's not how these things work. They just don't. And this is something that early on, I believe, was brought up by the liars at the top. They said early on, oh, it's a, well, you need to wear one to protect someone else. No, nonsense. If this works, then who wears a mask is protected. There's no need for them to force it on someone else. You know, if they're trying to claim that there's some sort of white lie here in order for, you know, us unwashed masses to protect ourselves, and they think that we're not able to ascertain the truth about the world and come to our own conclusions on things, so they can fuck off. Like, that's clown world nonsense, upside down world stuff. I don't need to stand for it, neither does anyone else. Because really it comes down to that. The basic logic behind this thing that throws it all away, throws all this and shows what ultimately it is, that what they're trying to do is inculcate an entire segment of the population in our country and across the free world basically into a cult in order for them to ignore basic logic and everything else that is beneficial for the human spirit, and just to become a part of this supposed in-crowd. And any number, you speculate on where that leads, not just be a part of this in-crowd, to be, you know, on the level with whoever, or to follow along and obey any orders. Who knows exactly where it's supposed to go? But some people are going to find out, because it would appear that these folks, regardless, I mean, there's millions upon millions, and every day they're stepping up more of people who are not standing for this. And nonetheless, there are some people who really drank the Kool-Aid, and they're gonna roll with it as far as it goes. And to them, I say, you know, God bless you. I hope you figure out what's going on, and that you don't let these liars and criminals continue to control you and to turn your psychology and that of your friends and family into their own personal plaything. But you know, if you're going on that route, then I don't know. Good luck. So if you're wearing one and it works, you're protected. There's no need for you to put a mask on someone else. If you have the vaccine and it works, you're protected. So there's no need to force it on someone else. This is the case of any vaccine all throughout history. You get the thing, you're good. This is how it was for smallpox, polio, all that. When it comes to chicken pox and the MMR, measles, mumps, rubella, any number of them. Now, these days, it's become such a... First off, there's the massive, massive amount of financial incentive for pushing further vaccines. And we can see that the health industry, so to speak, has been in the business of getting as much money as they possibly can. There is no glass ceiling for what people are willing to pay in order to keep their keep themselves alive. There is no glass ceiling on that. How much are you willing to pay? Well, it goes to how much money do you have? And really, that's what it's come down to in a lot of cases, which has shown, certainly over the last few decades, that the system is quite broken. And like many European countries... Excuse me, we'll hold back before we go on to that. Also, the other thing, how much are you willing to pay if you believe your life is in danger as well? Because remember that a lot of this is working off the power of suggestion and placebo effect as well. Because there really is a lot of power in whether or not someone believes they're sick or whether someone believes they're healthy. So there is a certain very, very significant percentage there of your own thoughts being capable of altering the health of your own body. You can look at this in what they call biofeedback as well. For instance, normally our brain, consciously, we don't have to think about breathing in order for us to take breaths. We don't have to think about making our heart beat in order for our heart to beat. It operates subconsciously, back of the brain, in the brainstem, hypothalamus, et cetera, you have these operations going on behind the scenes. You know, when they say that our conscious mind is only 10% of our brain, I'd argue it's even less than that. But that doesn't mean that your brain isn't doing anything. It's doing plenty of stuff, but our conscious awareness of it is delegated to a lower percentage than what the rest of it is doing. It's got to keep it all operating and, you know, running clean, this whole system, which is important. But the conscious mind is capable of a lot, and you can see this in the concept of biofeedback. So when you think about taking breaths, you can hold your breath or not. You can breathe at a certain pace as you wish, and that's all fine. And you can even do that with your heart as well. Listen to your heartbeat, put your hand over your chest, or put your pulse, fingers to your wrist or your neck, feel your pulse, and if you, so long as you have that feedback and you're aware of that pulse, then you can intentionally slow it or speed it up. This is something that's a bit learned often enough. It's not something we're necessarily born with, but it's through practice. You can learn how to relax yourself in order to have less of a pulse, slow it down a little bit, and that sort of thing. So our conscious mind is capable of doing that in a very real, invisible, practical manner. And in other ways that's less visible and in a less practical manner, we can use our conscious mind and our belief and faith to increase and benefit our health, or to make it worse too. Because if you really, really believe you're sick, you're going to get sick. And if you really, really believe you're healthy, you're going to be a little bit healthier. That's often not the case. Power of the mind is incredible. It really is. So speaking of back to that logic, and this is, again, something that happened with 9/11 and the National Institutes of Science and Technology, is that they themselves got corrupted back in 2001, bare minimum. So we're going on 20 years of one of the top institutions of this country at the highest level being corrupted, sold, bought out, whatever, for political means. So we're going on 20 years of that. Now, if you think about what happens when you have something corrupted, let's say you have an apple and it's starting to get rotten. So it's clear that apple 20 years ago was a bit rotten in some spot. And when you consider what it means to have the top science and technology institution of this country basically bent over and dropping the tenets of physical theory that is clearly an underpinning to our actual reality, then in a similar manner, in that apple, there is a very important portion of that apple, possibly quite there, right there at the middle, at the center, that is rotten. So if you think about that apple and it's rotten at the center 20 years ago, how is it now? If you don't excise that spot, if you don't go in there and be like, oh man, well, there's a rotten spot in this apple, we got to get this thing out of here if we're going to eat it properly, then you just let it go and it just perpetuates, well, it's going to rot the whole rest of the fruit. It's going to rot the whole rest of the thing if you don't get rid of that at the bottom. So that being that being the tendency and the inevitability, if you don't excise that, at the least basic rot, you know it's going to get worse and worse and worse. So, as a result, we have to plan for that and have something at the ready to replace it. Be like, okay, well, we're going to have a new apple here, because apparently this apple that we've been using, so to speak, or you could say, let's go with tree. Okay, this tree we've been using in order to shade ourselves or to provide the fruit that we eat. We're going to have another tree. And we're going to have to grow another one, find a good shoot off of the one that we have been using, and take a cutting off of there, and plant it fresh, and go from there. This is happening in a lot of different ways. You can see that in the creation of new platforms online, with the new video platforms, new communication platforms as well. I encourage you all to go out there and to keep talking about what's real and what's really happening. This is vital for us to move forward and find a better balance and harmony in this brave new world that we have here. But that's a very real example of that, growing that new tree. And it's not, it doesn't happen overnight, you know. When we have a rotten tree and we're trying to put together a new one, it takes a while. And it's important to have faith and to stand strong and to stick to your principles. And eventually we'll have that. It's not going to be necessarily pretty on the way, and it might get a little dicey in between, but it's important to have faith on that front that we'll make it through this, and we will. So, considering that, there are other manners in which that new tree can be looked at. We can look at our lives in such a way as well. For me personally, what I end up going to is the common sense of Thomas Paine. And you hear the stories about how they passed around pamphlets back in the day, and how in France they did as well. When it comes to communicating important ideas that are not necessarily, granted free, but are not approved by the ruling order. What you do is you put together pamphlets and you pass them around, and that's what I've been doing with my contribution to the Great Awakening, New Economic and Exorcism of Tyranny. Now, you might see these pamphlets around downtown in some city here or there. Ultimately, hopefully, they're perpetuating about the world. And that's my intention on there. And I don't put these things together lightly. It's not the sort of thing where it's just like, oh, okay, yeah, let's slop on some words here and pass it around and hopefully people will like it. There's a bit more to it than that. And also there's a sense of meritocracy when it comes to passing around pamphlets that encourage people to, if they identify, they find some truth within that, that encourages them to do the same, is that if your idea is not good enough to get someone else to pass it along or to talk about it, then it's just not good enough. Then you have to come up with something better. If you're not persuasive enough in the way that you describe where you're coming from and what it is that you think is important that could also benefit others, then you need to do a better job. And so it's the sort of thing that necessarily perpetuates when it's worthy of perpetuating. And so you know that it's the sort of thing that you can't necessarily, well, I should say you can't, but it's more difficult to be, for it to be corrupted in such a manner. Whether through money or whether power or through authority or some such thing. And that's a bit of an ideal of which that not only on the level of passing around good ideas, but also on the level of creating artwork, that whether it's music, whether it's paintings, whether it's books, anything that can really be perpetuated and that people like and enjoy and that they find important, there being that sense that if it is good enough, it will necessarily spread, is something that, in my mind, has been a part of what you might call the marketing of my efforts. And my first book, in fact, when I go back, this was I wrote a book called Coming of Age Novel, like a Huckleberry Finn, Catcher in the Rye type thing, back in 2009, called Billy's Adventures. And it's an interesting story. I'll jump back into the discussion here in a second, but we'll look into this. Shortly before that, I got a degree in creative writing from the University of Kansas. And what I thought was, okay, well, what do you do with a creative writing degree? Well, you write a book, don't you? Yeah, right? Sure. So I thought, okay, well, I'm going to write the best book ever, and it's going to be theories that describe the entirety of the world and all this sort of stuff. I had a lot of big plans back then, you might say, a lot of big ideas. Now, a lot of those were, might say, a little bit misdirected. Really, if you're trying to write philosophy that is going to last for, for all history, you're going to have a hard time doing it when you're, what was I, 25, 24, something like that, 24 years old. Certainly in the modern era, where it's not until you really see adulthood and you enter the real world that you can see what's really going on here. So I had to finish school in order to really get an education. But nonetheless, I thought, okay, creative writing degree, what do? Write a book. So I put together, I thought of doing this this grand philosophy, but I figured, it's not going to work. But what I can do is write a coming-of-age novel. And so I did. And I still got a few copies of that. Hopefully it got passed around. But something that was in my mind at the time was, people would say, oh, well, you gotta market this and you gotta sell this to people, and why don't you get with, schools and that sort of thing and, try to get them to put it on their reading list and that sort of thing. Get in touch with teachers, all that sort of deal. And I thought, well, and you might think that this is a ruse I played on myself, perhaps. I don't know. Or perhaps not. But I thought, well, if the book is really, really good, if it's good enough that it needs to be, then someone who reads it will tell their neighbor about it. They will read the book, and they'll go tell someone else about it and say that you got to get this thing and you got to read it. Or they'll just pass it on to them, and then they'll read it, and they'll pass it on in such a manner. If it's good enough, then the marketing will do itself, such that as the creator I won't need to spend my time necessarily on perpetuating that, but more so coming up with new things and creating new things. So in a similar manner, that's where the pamphlets end up as well, and that's the philosophy behind the perpetuation and communication of that idea. And yeah, similar to the book that I did some while back. So hopefully that's the case. And if it's not good enough, then that it doesn't get perpetuated and passed around, well, damn it, it's not good enough then. then I'm going to make something better and put that out there. So I like the way that it's kind of it's a simple manner of going forward with one's ideas, and it doesn't get too complicated. And if you remember the talk I had on the first show about methodology and subject matter, one of the things I like to do in order to keep my mind fresh and open for new ideas and for new things is to hold on to the you might say simpler equations that are applicable in more situations, rather than memorizing and adhering to the very specific equations that are only applicable in their specific situation. So the simpler ones I like to hold and roll with them and go from there. And so far it seems to have worked. But yeah, that's the story on that. So that's the philosophy behind that communication and perpetuation of these ideas, and a bit of the marketing aspect of things as well. This also concerns my how I've gone about with my website there. I've tried to just put good stuff on there, things that people would find educational and enlightening and entertaining. And if it's good enough, then people will talk about it and the word will spread. If not, then I got to do a better job. So also concerning going back to that the group psychological aspect of things, I think I mentioned that that when it comes to 1984, that's very explicitly mentioned when it comes to groupthink. And the value and importance of individuality is as high as it gets. There is some value to, of course, to us having a social and communal mindset and running with that when it comes to certain aspects of things. And there is a balance there that here in our country we have struck in a lot of ways ideologically, between that ideology of, you could say, I mean, the simple difference is conservatives and liberals and Democrats and Republicans and that sort of thing. And there's a balance there that's pretty vital, because you can go too far in either direction. In one direction, you'd end up with this authoritarian hellscape, dystopia, where everyone's treated like a child and a machine and a robot. And there's rampant abuse, and that's the stick that's used to beat people into submission. Basically, you have a group world of slavery where people are conned into thinking that they're helping out their fellow man by treating him like garbage. And then on the other hand, you have extreme of individuality that ends up with anarchy and the rule of nature. That is not very helpful in itself either. And that's something anybody can really clearly imagine, and that's something to be avoided as well. And in such a place, people don't trust each other. Nobody believes in anything but themselves, and it's a selfish selfish dystopia, you might say. But traditionally, here in the States, we've struck a balance between those two things. Between these two competing ideologies, that of the communal and social aspect of things, and that of the individual. And that's what the Constitution, that's part of the brilliance behind it. Because how is it that you can have, how is it you can craft a government that takes your taxes and has authority over you and over your neighbor and your friends and your community? And how do you give that government that authority, but at the same time maintain your own individual authority as well? And that's what they did. That's what they did with that Constitution. That's why it's so vital, because it creates that social, that communal, that doing what is good for the community type of thing through government, but at the same time maintains that government in a limited capacity in its authority over the individual. The way that got put together is absolutely brilliant, and clearly it's brought us to nearly 270 years, something like that. 250 or so, I think. Yeah. 1776, so it'll be 2026, so it'll be about 250. We'll have our bicentennial and a half coming up here in about 5 years. And I certainly will be celebrating if our country is still here, which it will be. And quick note on that, there's a push going on where people are saying, okay, this is the hill that I'll die on when it comes to mandating and authoritatively, you know, pushing whether it's masks, whether it's vaccines on the population generally or on people's kids or anything else. There's a line that people, the line is really coming on. And by the way, for all y'all out there, make sure that you go over there and ask yourself, okay, what is the line that you're not going to cross? What's the line you're not going to cross? Will you, if someone orders you to do something, when will you tell them no? Because if you're not going to tell them no when you're being told, okay, give this person an injection and they don't want it, like, what's the next line after that that you're not going to do when someone tells you to, some authoritative figure claims to that it must be done? Because you need to find a line, you need to hold to that. You can look at the Milgram experiment and how that went. That quick recap on that Milgram experiment is that it said that they brought in people. You had an experimenter, someone who's just selected from a class. And you have one person behind the glass, and you have one person in front of the glass. Person behind the glass is sitting there at a switchboard, and when they're supposed to ask the subject questions, and if the subject gets a question wrong, they're supposed to give them a shock, a slight shock, almost just a little jolt. But the switchboard has increasing voltages and power as it goes up, and the person at the switchboard is also being watched by an official with a lab coat of sorts, and he's the one telling them to push the switch. Well, the way that this experiment ran is that it turns out the person on the other side, who was the subject, was an actor, and they weren't actually getting any electric shocks. But the person who was at the switchboard was the real subject, and they were trying to see how far will a person go before they tell this authority figure no. And they say that there's a significant percentage of people who went all the way to the top, to the point where the person in the chair who got that question wrong, they ended up hitting him with voltage based on the, you know, authority figure who was part of the experiment as well, telling them, oh no, shock them with a higher voltage, shock them higher, shock them more. And so long as they heard that from the authority figure, they would perpetuate that and continue, and to the point where some of them were even shocking the person when they were clearly, or at least showing themselves to be unconscious, quite possibly dead. or at least acting like they're dead, that sort of thing. What they found, there's a significant number of people who will go all the way to the top and even shock that person when they're laying there unconscious because some authority figure behind them in a lab coat was telling them to do it. So somewhere along that switchboard is a line for everyone. And it's important that you have that line. So figure out where that line is. You know, if you're willing to inject somebody with some experimental concoction against their wishes, what's the line you're not going to do based on someone telling you things? Are you not going to speculate further on where that might go, but nonetheless, find your line and hold to it because it's pretty vital. Anyway. A lot of people have already hit their line. They have hit their point of which they're not going to comply anymore. And this is the way we get out of this as well. I'd like to reiterate that it only stops when you stop doing it. It only stops when you, the individual person who is living your life, stops doing it. When you stop imposing upon others, and allowing yourself to be imposed upon, that's when this finishes. But a lot of people have met their line already, and the phrase that they use is that's a hill that I'll die on. You know, you pick your hill, I'm willing to die on that hill. I've reached that hill as well, and I'm willing to die there. But this is the thing, what's really going to happen is that you're not going to die on that hill. We aren't dying on that hill, you know. Otherwise, you know, heck, I'd probably be dead already. And quite honestly, I'm kind of surprised, and I'm a little bit surprised that I'm still kicking. It feels like, you might say, extra innings when I thought the game was over. Nonetheless, what's going to happen is we're not going to die on that hill because we're going to hold the hill and we're going to live. We're winning. So Team Human is winning this thing. And it's really just a matter of time until the nefarious forces who've been imposing this nonsense upon the free world collapse. And we're seeing that every day. One of the things that happens as well when you have these... quite literally, there is an evil force behind... behind the actions and words and thoughts and that sort of thing behind a lot of the people pushing this authoritative abuse. And what happens with that is when people stop listening to them, let's say you have a group of gremlins who are... Well, I need to make this exactly that fantastic, but let's see, you have a gang. Okay, this is a gang of ruffians who like to go around and beat up innocent people and steal their money, that sort of thing. Well, what happens when people stop standing for it and they quit, you know, giving them their money? Let's say, for instance, that there just weren't any people around anymore for that gang to beat up on, and so they're just walking around themselves through deserted roads and an area of the city that the people aren't hanging out at. What happens to that gang? What do they when there isn't anyone else for them to beat up on? Well, they end up beating up on each other. And this is what happens when they say that the demons begin eating themselves, eating each other. And that's where this goes. So long as you stand up for yourself, so long as I stand up for myself, and he stands up for himself, and she stands up for herself, then eventually the only people who are getting abused are the abusers themselves. And that's where that'll go. So... watch out for that, and that's that's the direction that this ends up going. When it comes to that group psychology, if you refuse to be indoctrinated into that cult and drink that Kool-Aid, eventually they're just going to, you know, destroy themselves. The power of individuality is vital on that front. So stand up for your constitutional principles. This is why it is and how it is that we put together the government that we have today, and why it is that it's so strong, and why we have the prosperity that we do and the freedom that we do at present. I hope you all can remember that, and I think I will leave it at that. For coming up on the end of the hour, and one more point of note is that I've mentioned conspiracy theorists as well in my last book, The Fire and Lightning and the Sum of All Parts. There's a particular character who is in the second half. The Sum of All Parts is a three-act Shakespearean existential modern lyric comedy. And in the second act, there's a character who represents a revolutionary. And he stands up in the midst of this party with a bunch of fantastic characters and gives his big speech about what's going on, what to do about it, and that sort of thing. And he mentions that you don't need conspiracy when you have history. And ultimately, that's what this is that we're talking about. We're talking about history here, folks. And those who control the present, control the past. Those who control the past, control the future. And hopefully this sense of the history that we make will encourage y'all to make the present even better, because it ain't over. Life continues on, and life finds a way. So go out there, continue on, find your way, and when you're not defending that hill, do something with the position that you got, and enjoy your life, make things better for the people around you. Work and love, and keep your eyes open to the beauty that everyone has inside themselves. So on that note, I'll leave it to you, leave it to the rest of y'all. This has been the Maverick Radio Hour, coming to you from Westport, Kansas City, Missouri, on September 29th, 2021. And I'm wishing you peace, love, harmony, justice, life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness.